This is a CBC podcast.
There are just a few days left before the votes are counted in our provincial election. By Monday night, we should know who will govern Saskatchewan for the next 4 years. For the latest, we've reached our political panel. Adam Hunter covers politics for CBC Saskatchewan. Murray Mandrick writes a political column in the Regina Leader Post, and they both join me now in studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Adam, what have the past couple of days been like on the campaign trail?
Yeah, super chill stuff. So we had a couple of days ago this report that's from the Conflict of Interest Commissioner, which found that Gary Graywall, an outgoing MLA for the SAS party in Regina Northeast, was in breach of the rules because his businesses or businesses he had interest in were benefiting from government contracts through hotels and social services clients that were sent there, that he wasn't compliant within the 90 days that he was given. Gary Graywall has responded and says, you know, he kind of disagrees with this. When Scott Moe has been asked about this, his answer has been, he's a private citizen, Gary Graywall. It's not really our problem anymore, but that we'll deal with this. And even yesterday when he's asked about it, he said, well, we're not going to presume that we're going to form government and be the people that are deciding what the punishment is, because that was left up to the MLAs who are elected. So we'll have to wait and see on that. We still know that Jeremy Cockerell is also being investigated by the Conflict Commissioner over a business interest that he had involving a window business. So that is still up. Going. Mo also mentioned that they're waiting for that and they'll decide to, you know, when that comes down. So that's the first thing. The second thing is we had
Speaking of windows, we had a shooting,
non-shooting, vandalism, Mo calling it unprecedented when it was really wasn't. I guess the opposite is precedented. There is vandalism every so often.
This was compared it to the U.S. presidential election at the time.
He did. And this was before the police had a full investigation and they didn't say anything of that, those things on the record about gunshots. So we know that. Mo saying that, you know, yesterday when asked about it, you know, regardless of what this was, this is not great. You know, there's people in the offices, there's volunteers, that sort of thing. That completely aside, the parties have both been kind of crisscrossing each other and probably passing each other in their giant branded trucks on the highway.
Do they do the two finger?
I don't know what they do, but they're
Just one finger?
Mo was in PA twice this week. Yesterday is in Moose Jaw. The opposite for Carla Beck, PA yesterday, previously Moose Jaw, and then they're both in Regina today.
Murray, what stands out to you from all of that?
Well, as Adam says, it's been incredibly tense, and the silliness over the non-gunshot report where it was obviously something else, where it was an air rifle or what else, I don't know. But the whole controversy, that's a non-controversy.
This is vandalism at a candidate's office, and I guess people brighter than me quickly realized it didn't penetrate both panes of glass.
And they equated it to signs being pulled up, and you know, this is obviously a plea for whatever to move whatever votes or to do whatever he had. I hope no one in the SAS party is charged with falsifying a police report. That's all I can say, because it's silly. And it's absolutely, you know, but this is what happens in campaigns, and it happens when the campaigns get as tense. I think as Adam alluded to, it's not quite as tense in the last couple of days, because now they're out there, people are out voting, they're getting their votes out, their E-Day machine are in full gear, and that is where the SAS party really thrives. For all the polls, and I think we're going to see another one today that verifies the earlier Incitrix poll that came out showing the SAS party or the NDP with a 5-point lead on the SAS party. I think we're going to see another one that with probably numbers similar, but polls are getting to be less reliable in terms of the actual numbers, because it's hard to get people to answer their phones, and they're also less reliable in terms of sort of the science of them. So I think what we're seeing anyway is probably a significant rise in popular vote for the NDP, possibly under the circumstances, more popular vote. But that doesn't necessarily move enough seats for government. We've talked about this many times, and we'll go into it in great length on Monday night. But 17 seats, to flip 17 seats, not just do well, not just be competitive, not just everything, is a Herculean task for anybody, for any political party in a single election. I am interested in seeing how well they do. I expect the NDP to do significantly better. I think there's a lot of people, a lot of things that happen with the government coming home to roost. They've run a horrible campaign.
The NDP
the
has?
The SAS party, in terms of the NDP actually have run a pretty good campaign for the NDP, but there's been mistake after mistake and mistake. And you don't expect from the SAS party. They're seasoned campaigners that know what they're doing, but having Mo out by himself, having him out with no candidates, having him go hither and yon 2 days in PA, not answering reporters' questions when they needed to be answered, a lot of clumsiness, playing defense because there was so much that came out related to Randy Weeks's accusation, seeing Ian Hanna and Mark Docherty and Glenn Hart at a NDP event post-debate basically saying no, enough is enough, we can't vote for these people anymore, really dealt some body blows to the SAS party during the campaign. But now we're at the stage where the SAS party is looking at who's getting their vote out and where they can win. I think they probably conceded in their own minds that they're going to lose a few members, probably quite a few, but they had quite a few to lose. And I think that this is where we're at in the stage is just reality is setting in, and hopefully we'll see a few calmer days than we did in the last week or two.
Adam, often where the leaders spend their time, particularly in the last few days, is telling. What are you watching for?
Yeah, this has been really instructive, I think. And not, unlike the last few campaigns where people did not expect the NDP to be very competitive, and now, as Murray said, the polls are showing that they are going to be more competitive. How that translates and where they get those votes is going to be really interesting. I think most people are expecting if they're getting a 5-point, 10-point, 15-point bump from last time, that's going to turn into votes. But I was in Moose Jaw yesterday with Scott Moe. He was very encouraged by the advanced voting numbers. Specifically, they know that their voters are coming out. So he seemed to be excited about that and not sort of playing defense as we maybe have seen the last few days. Carla Beck going to Martinsville and Scott Moe being in Martinsville is very interesting because that's considered, you know, safe SAS party territory, but it's changed a little bit. It's Martinsville, Blairmore. That's a neighborhood of Saskatoon now. So the fact that the NDP think they can maybe get in there is interesting. And it's really a 2.5 party race because Green Party's running there, but there's no Sask United Buffalo Party kind of spoiler. White City Capel near Regina is another one where the NDP has spent time. The SAS party's been there. But Prince Albert, Moose Jaw, typically, like we've seen in election after election, where that Northcote seat flip-flops, the Waccamaw seat has been both NDP and Sask party. But there are those ones there. Saskatoon's super fascinating to me because we have a lot of new candidates because high-profile candidates aren't running, like Don Morgan and Gord Wyant. They had massive wins. So when Murray talks about like flipping seats, we're talking about flipping seats in cities that this NDP, okay, they're going to win some seats in the cities, but they have to win a lot more votes. They have to get a lot of people to vote for them. They also have to get a lot of people just to stay home probably that used to vote for the SAS party. That's going to be a tall task. But the NDP is feeling good about those Regina and Saskatoon battles where there are still going to be a lot of toss-ups, I think.
What are you going to be watching for in the final few days?
Well, it'll be on layers. It'll be where they go, where they're going. And interestingly, Carla Beck is in the Battlefords, which is a critical seat for an NDP win. The bedroom community seats that Adam mentioned, like Martinsville, Blairmore, the White City Qu'Appelle seat. If the NDP do start winning those, and I see those results coming in when we're on the panel on Monday night, and I see that happening, I'm going to be very interested in seeing something change. But in the likely event that they don't make major strides in seats like that and still struggle to win rural seats like that, like Last Mile and Touchwood, the NDP are talking about, but I don't think anybody can seriously think they are. If they are, it's a whole different ball game. That's the first level of big change. The less big change, as Adam mentioned, is seeing them win seats like Saskatoon Silver Springs. They'll probably pick up Regina South Albert, where Alina Young is now the candidate, but Mo Fayez has a seat in Pasqua. The Churchill Wildhood seat by Lambert in Saskatoon. These are all critical seats. Westview in Saskatoon by Buckingham. All seats that if the NDP start picking up, That means a very different opposition, a very strong opposition well into its 20s and formidable, the kind of things opposition that's going to change the dialogue in the House, because it's going to be a lot of loud NDP members forcing a lot of rural Saskatchewan guys to sit in their seats for a long time and have to, because there'll be actually issues related to quorum by that point.
Which we haven't seen in a long time.
So that's the whole next level. If they don't start winning seats like Lena Young's seat in Regina South, Albert, then we're kind of looking something closer to the status quo, because anything under 20 seats for the NDP right now, I don't think it is going to be considered a great victory.
Yeah. What is the threshold, do you think, for the NDP leader to keep her job? Because this would be the first time that one did after an election.
Yeah,
Ryan. In a long time.
Yeah, Ryan Miley lost a little bit, but then lost a by-election, and then he stepped down. What's decorum, guys? I haven't been around for that, so. I'm just kidding. I didn't know that was a thing here.
But the House Whip really had to work back in the day. And then if you have a strong majority, as I'm sure listeners know,
you have to have 15 people in the House. Yeah.
Ray's looking at me like he's explaining it to me. I'm kidding, because it has been such a blowout on the scoreboard. But I'll say, I think the polling for the NDP being this strong and all these polls saying they're ahead, if for some reason on Monday night we see them at the status quo or just eking over 20, then I'm not going to speculate on Carla Beck's job, but I think that there is hope in the NDP, and they're whispering and they're campaigning like they're going for it. And so I think those are very different things than Ryan Miley having to defend his seat. And me on my last 4 years ago, and us on the panel go speculating when Ryan Miley's watching the results and we had to wait until the mail-ins to know he was safe. This is a very different story this time.
I forgot how.
Yeah, I don't think his family liked that he was watching our coverage and we said that that was the seat to watch and he was the leader. But they hadn't, as you said, Cam Broughton, Dwayne Langenfelter, both lost to rookies. Miley was up against a rookie and he won. We don't expect that to happen with Carla Beck in Lakeview, but the calculus is much different this time around.
I think the reverse question is more interesting. What's Scott Moe's threshold? Yeah. Because I think maybe I'm reasonably certain that they're positioned well to form another majority. It might be a significantly smaller one. But what does that mean? If it's really close and if the NDP do start going into the even low or mid-20s or high 20s, that's bad news for Scott Moe in terms of his leadership for all the things that we talked about, because he doesn't want to be here sitting around in the House with his vote needed to sit there in Regina and get things done. This means no government travel. This means a whole lot of things that made government fun for them, and after 10 years as premier, which it will be for him by the end of this term, then we have to basically think about, well, how long is he going to last and how long the process? But that's getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. Maybe let's see what happens on Monday night and see. But these are all the things to watch out for, and it's stuff that we haven't been watching out for, because we've always, these last three elections,
how
big would the win be? Will the NDP get past a dozen seat opposition? Yeah. I think they will. It's a legitimate question to ask what happens if they don't get much higher than that. But I think the problem is more on the government side.
Well, we'll have all Monday night to talk about it. I'll see you guys on the television.
Looking forward to it.
Yes, indeed.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.